views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on Youth Voice Amplified are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent the official position of the Kern County Superintendent of Schools office. Any content provided by our guests are of their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, school, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything. Youth Voice Amplified covers a wide range of topics that can be upsetting to some listeners. Content warning for each episode and links to resources can be found in the episode show notes on our website. All names in this interview have been changed for anonymity and safety purposes, but their voices and stories are real.
When young people share their stories, they can change the world. But some youth voices still go unheard. Join me, Janessa Fisher.
And me, Brian Johnson, for this youth-led monthly interview series as young people tell their untold stories of experiences with homelessness, foster care, disabilities, teen parenting, and more.
Each conversation will uncover stories of hope, strength from our youth storytellers who want to share the best ways that we can all support youth in similar situations as theirs. If you want to know how to do better for youth or simply just be inspired, this is your show. Every youth has a story to tell.
Are you ready to listen?
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Youth Voice Amplified, the podcast where every youth is heard and every voice matters. I'm your host, Janessa.
And I'm Brian. This episode is a continuation of our interview with Evelette. If you haven't listened to part one, do yourself a favor and pause this episode and go back and listen to last month's episode where Evelette shared about the obstacles and challenges she encountered in high school while being in foster care and being homeless, and how these experiences shaped her into the incredible mother and youth advocate she is today.
Now please enjoy part two of our conversation with Evelette.
Being a teen parent, like, how difficult was it managing your time between, like, school and parenting?
So that was really hard. Like I said, I had the opportunity to go move in with this family and go back to school. So for a while, I did school full-time, you know, the 8 hours at school. And then after school, I would go home. They were actually really nice enough to... And she wanted me to finish school so bad that she would actually pay the neighbor across the street from us to take care of my daughter while I went to school. So for a long time, it was school all day, and then the afternoon I would spend it with my daughter and be with my daughter. I would wait till she went to sleep so I could do my homework and then stay up at night doing homework, because I always wanted to make sure that I had that time to spend with her. And it went like that for a while, I want to say like a good 3 or 4 months. And then it got to the point where I was able to catch up on my credits enough to go into independent studies. As a mom, I wanted to feel like I was providing for my daughter. Like, they were providing us somewhere to stay, and like, they were putting food on the table and everything for us, but it didn't feel right having them pay for like diapers, wipes, my daughter's formula and clothes and stuff like that. I wanted to be able to provide that for her. So when I got the chance to go into independent studies, I took that chance. And then she was like, you know what, like, if you promise you're gonna stay on track, then yeah, we can do that. And I ended up getting a work permit. So they gave me a work permit, and on the work permit, it said 20 hours. Okay, don't do this at home, but it said 20 hours. And I took it upon myself to, like, scan the work permit that they gave me and, like, white out the little thing and then type in 40 hours instead of 20 so I could work full time. So I printed that out, and then I had a job at McDonald's lined up. So I started working at McDonald's, and I gave them that work permit that said I could work 40 hours. So I was 16, working 40 hours a week already. And so that was really hard too, because I went from, like, you know, going to school all day and then having the afternoon with my daughter to I would go home for like a good 10, 20 minutes, change into my uniform, and then go to work from 5 to 9, and then come home, put my daughter to bed, and then the next morning, same thing, school, spend a little bit of time with her. And it was a sacrifice, honestly, that I had to make. I was only spending a little bit of time with her, but I wanted to be able to provide for her as and still save up at the same time, because although this family had took an opportunity for on me to like be able to go back and go to school, I knew that once I turned 18, I wanted to move out. And so I was saving my money, and I was like working on buying a car and stuff like that. So it was a sacrifice that I had to make to have a little bit of time with her, but it was well worth it. And I had to go to school once a week, so then I would go turn in my homework, I would do my test, and then go to work, and then spend time with my daughter, and then stay up all night again. And for a long time it was like that. I want to say it was like for a good 6 months until I graduated, that was my schedule, like work, spend time with my daughter, stay up all night doing schoolwork. It was a sacrifice that was well worth it. I ended up graduating. I was able to have my daughter there with me. I ended up moving out of that home before I turned 18. Unfortunately, like I said, I was still at a point in my life where I was trying my best, but there were still mistakes that I made along the way. So I ended up having to move out of that house before I turned 18. So I went back to like kind of being homeless and struggling and stuff like that. But like I said, that sacrifice that I made helped me have money saved up. So I went back to being homeless, but at this time when I was homeless, I was able to buy a car. So I was able to keep all of our stuff in the car and stuff like that. And then I was able to like take my daughter to her grandma's house while I went to work and still spend a whole bunch of time with her and then go drop her off back at her grandma's before it was nighttime because I would sleep in my car. So it was like an experience that I had like that for a while. But going to school and working and being a teen parent was really hard, but it's possible. Like, if there's any advice that I can give to any of the teen parents that are listening, is it's possible. It may be hard. A lot of the times you're going to feel like you're going to sacrifice a lot of things. And it feels like you're nothing like these other teenagers that are out there doing different stuff. But it's possible. And it's something that'll pay off. I know that it seems like a lot, but it'll pay off. And a lot of the times people are going to tell you that when you have a kid at a young age, your life is over. Don't listen to them. Like, your life's not over. It's just starting. You're young. And your kid is for sure going to be your motivation to want to do better and overcome everything that comes your way. Because I know that my daughter was that for me.
Would you say that's a stigma that you're trying to erase with as far as teen parenting goes?
Okay. So there gets a little... Like, I don't promote or support, like, teen pregnancy. Like, now if I could go back, like, I would be like... If there was, like, advice that I could give myself, it would be, wait, you're not ready. You know, I didn't have anybody to teach me right from wrong. So I didn't know what I was doing. Like, I got pregnant, and it was just like, oh, you know, damn, like, that's it, you know? But I didn't... If I would have known that it was going to be that hard, I would have waited. Like, I'm not against it. Like, if it happens, it happens. You know, your life's not over. But one advice that I'm always going to give my daughter now is, like, wait, like, don't be in a rush to grow up, you know? Like, I know that I didn't really have a childhood. I was forced to grow up. But if I could have saved myself from, like, having to endure all that trauma with my child, because I had her at such a young age and I was still going through a lot. Like, she had to go through homelessness with me, you know? She went through the struggle with me. So if I could have saved myself from that and, like, not... had to have gone through so much things with her, like, kept her from that, then I would have waited. So, like, teen pregnancy, if it happens, you know, it happens, you're gonna have your kid, you know. But if you can stay away from it and, like, protect yourself and use protection and, like, get on birth control or have someone to talk to, then I would recommend doing that. Like, don't be in such a hurry to grow up or have kids. Like, it's hard. It's so hard. Like, it's not easy to be a teen parent. But would I say that your life's not over if you're a teen parent? It's for sure not over.
Everlette is our guest today on Youth Voice Amplified, and she is talking to us today about her experiences as a homeless youth.
So, being a parent and being homeless is, like, it was one of the hardest things ever, because you want to provide for someone, and you want to be there for someone, and you want to, like, do everything for them, but it's so hard because you can't even do certain things for yourself. Like I said, I was a minor. I wasn't even 18. There was a lot of stuff that I couldn't do for myself. Like, I was working since 16. Like, I had money, I had paycheck stuff, but I couldn't sign my own lease till I turned 18, you know? There was a lot of things that I wanted to do that I couldn't do for myself, so it was hard for me to do them for my daughter. I know that one of my biggest fears being in foster care, one of the reasons that I was always run away was because I was a dependent of the state, but I never wanted my daughter to be a dependent of the state. Like, no one was there for me, but I knew for sure that I was going to be there for my daughter. I knew that nothing was going to stop me from being there for her. I knew that no matter, like, what was going on, I was going to be there for her, provide for her, and I didn't want to get separated from her. But being in Jameson, it was like I was in Jameson for months at a time because there's no foster home. There was no foster home that wanted to take a teenage girl and a newborn baby at the same time, which I get it. You know, like, a teenager, you're, like, scared, and then you have a newborn baby at the same time. Like, there's a lot of ways that people can look at it. And I would be scared to get a teenager and a newborn baby at the same time, too. But like that was like one of my biggest fears, like they're gonna separate me from her. So I would run away and I would be like, I would run away and I would figure it out, and I'll be like, they're not gonna separate me from her, you know, like I'm not gonna let them separate us just because I'm a ward of the state. It was hard being a teen parent while like going through homelessness, but I knew how bad I wanted to be in my daughter's life. And I knew that it was going to mean like I had to make sacrifices. And like one of the biggest sacrifices that I would make was she would go sleep at her grandma's house, and I would go pick her up throughout the day and spend all day with her and just take her back at nighttime, because I wasn't going to make her sleep at the park with me or make her sleep in the car with me. She was just a kid. She didn't deserve that, and she didn't know what was going on, you know? Mm-hmm. So if she had somewhere safe to sleep, I was for sure, by all means, going to make sure that she got to that safe place and slept there, you know? But I also wanted to spend time with her, and I wanted her to know or feel like, you know, yeah, my mom's going through a lot, but she's still going to make sure she's there for me. So I could have just left her with her grandma and just been like, you know what, I'll come back for her when my life's more figured out and stuff like that. But I didn't want to do that. Not for one second did it run through my head to just leave my child and come back when I wasn't struggling so much. I wanted to be there for her without making her go through the struggle, you know? So it was like I said, nighttime, you're with your grandma, you're somewhere safe to sleep, you know, you're good. And then throughout the daytime, if I'm not working, I'm gonna come see you, I'm gonna come spend time with you, take you to the park, do stuff like that, to make sure that I was still like present in her life. So it was hard, but it was like a sacrifice that was well worth it.
Got you. And what are some resources available for our teen parents?
So I know for sure that Youth for Christ was one of the big ones that really helped me. There's Teen Challenge, there's Youth for Christ, there's the Bakersfield Pregnancy Center. I know that's where I got my first ultrasound for my daughter. And I didn't have no one with me, which they made it really easy because I was a minor. And then I wouldn't say that I know too many resources that were there for me, like when I was going through like being homeless and parenting, only because at the time I wasn't so open to resources. At the time I was more scared of them than I was open to them. I was so scared that like, if I told anybody what I was going through, they were going to take me in a better way. Or they were going to think that I didn't have the opportunity to provide for them. They were going to take my daughter away. They didn't think that I was going to have like the power to provide for her. So they were going to be like, oh, you're not fit enough to parent, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was just like, I was more closed to resources than open to them. Like, I wasn't really worried about what place could do something for me, because I was just like, if they see that I'm not fit enough, or if they think that I'm not fit enough, or I'm not in the place to take care of her, provide for her, they're gonna take her away. And that was my biggest fear. My biggest fear was getting her taken away, or her becoming a ward of the state because what I was going through, you know?
Mm-hmm. So pretty much them finding out about your situation and kind of,
yeah,
separating you guys. Got you.
Now, do you feel like you would have been more open now that you know a little bit more resources, and that they wouldn't have done that for sure?
Yeah, if I wouldn't have been so scared, for sure I would have been more open to like finding out about resources. I would have did my research more, you know, got to know a lot more about resources that actually help. Like when I first went to the Dream Center, so for those who are listening and don't know what the Dream Center is a foster youth resource center here in town for foster youth. So when I first went to the Dream Center, I was 17, and I was I already had my daughter, and then I was pregnant with my son. But even like then, trusting them and like getting able to know them and like seeing that they really wanted to help me was hard for me as well. Like I was really close to my resources. I didn't know a lot of things. I was still like having a hard time trusting people. But if I would have known the resources that I know now back then, and didn't have the trouble of like trusting people, I would have for sure used them.
You're listening to Youth Voice Amplified. This is our guest, Evelette, who is a homeless youth and foster youth advocate in our community. Please tell us about your work with foster and homeless youth as a peer support specialist. What does a typical day look like for you?
So I practically just shared a lot of my story with you guys. I grew up in a foster care system. I was homeless. I was a runaway. In between a lot of what I didn't share with you guys, just because you're asking me what my role means to me, I'm going to tell you a little bit more of what I went through. So I went through a lot with like the education side of it and being homeless and trying to get through school and then being homeless and being a teen parent. But I actually struggled in a lot of different ways. I went through domestic violence at a very young age. So I'm a domestic violence survivor. And then I also struggled with like my mental health for a really long time. And then I also struggled, unfortunately, with substance abuse for a while as well. So there was like a lot of battles that I had going on. And like I said, I first came to the first went to the Dream Center when I was 17. And I was still in a really lost place at the time. So, you know, being able to go through their program, graduate their program, and use my resources now as an adult, like, it was a lot easier after I turned 18, because it was like, all right, you know what? Now they can't just take my daughter away, because I felt like I had more power once I turned 18, you know? Like, I would be able to fight for her. I was able to get, like, my own place under my name. Like, there was a lot of differences. So, like, being able to go through these programs and use my resources and then help them make me stronger, it was still a battle. Like, from having all that trauma that I went through as a teenager, as a like a young adult and then a teenager, it was really hard. So now that I get to do what I do now I'm a peer support specialist. And for those who don't know what a peer support specialist is, a peer support is practically just someone that holds your hand and guides you through whatever it is that you're going through. So I like to look at my job as like I'm holding the hope for these kids, for these youth actually that just don't have it for themselves right now. Or a lot of the times when we're going through battles, we don't see that light at the end of the tunnel. I know for a really long time I didn't see it. Like I said, I believed that I wasn't gonna do anything with my life, or I wasn't gonna be nothing, and all it took was like those two people believing in me. So I like to look at my role as that's what I'm doing for these youth, you know? Like I'm believing in them even when they can't believe in themselves. I'm helping them and guiding them through what they're going through, using my experience as like, hey, you can, it's okay that if you went through this, you can go through this and still become something and still do something different. Like, just because we grew up knowing something or we went through all these things growing up, it doesn't mean that that has to be our destiny. Like, we are the author of our own story, you know? It's never done until we say it's done. So to be able to use my experience of what I went through and like change that and use it for the better of like the youth that I work with now, I know it means a lot to me. It's like I'm able to give back to my younger self. The knowledge that I didn't have back then, I have it now. And like the resources that I was afraid to use back then, I'm able to help the youth that I work with now use them in their hard times where they don't know who they can and cannot trust. Like I'm able to use that knowledge and my experience to help them now. And that means like a lot to me. My role is something that I don't take lightly. It's something that I really appreciate and love, and it's like I wake up every morning and I'm happy to do what I do. But for a really long time, as like I said, I kind of got lost in the midst of it, you know, going through what I went through and then dealing with like youth that have similar experiences and stuff like that. It brought up a lot of undealt trauma, and I have a lot of trauma that I had just put down in the dungeon. I hadn't dealt with it, so I got like really mixed up in the mix of all that, and it was really hard for me to like overcome that for a while. For like a time in my career, I was like really lost. Like I didn't know if this was really what I wanted to keep doing, only because a lot of my undealt trauma was coming up. So for anybody that's working with youth, if you have undealt trauma, and sometimes we get so caught up in the mix of what we're doing and what our goal is in our job, that we forget that in order to help other people, we have to be able to help ourselves and take care of ourselves. So I like self-care is like really a thing, you know. I now make sure that I prioritize taking care of myself, and I actually started therapy. You know, I know therapy doesn't work out for a lot of people, but I started therapy so that I can be able to work on my undealt trauma and like be able to help myself so that I can continue to help these youth and do it in the best way that I can. You know, I don't ever want what I'm going through or my undealt trauma to affect the way that I help these youth. So, but I love what I do, and I'm thankful at the time, I didn't realize why I was going through everything that I was going through. I didn't understand it. But now I like to say that my testimony is my purpose, and I went through everything that I went through to be able to do what it is that I do now.
First and foremost, thank you so much for being vulnerable and being able to share that stuff. I can feel your passion from across the table. I'm a person that feels stuff very openly, and yeah. I can feel it, and it made me tear up a little bit just to hear you talking about it and how you care so much, because sometimes that's not always what we get, and you care so, so much. And I'm not going to cry. I have thank a handle.
You mentioned like you're being a peer support and your lived experience. Do you feel like that alone helps you serve youth better?
For sure. I actually have a youth that I was with this morning before I came in. You guys caught me while I was on the field. And this youth is actually currently right now struggling with substance abuse. And he said, I don't know why you help me so much or why you want to help me so much. He's like, but if I'm being honest with you, I feel the difference in the way that you want to help me different than the other staff from the Dream Center. And I told him, I was like, it's not that they don't want to help, or it's not that they don't know how to help, it's just that I've been there. That struggle that you're going through right now, I've been there, and I have such a passion to help you for it because I can relate to it. So I for sure feel like it's different when you've gone through something, like the power and the need to like want to help others that are going through something that you went through. It's a lot different. You can feel it, the youth can feel it, like every like, it makes a difference. Yeah, it makes a difference.
With that being said, like, since you have that experience and, you know, he felt more open and honest to that you were trying to help him, what advice do you have for the other ones starting, like, to be a peer support or just other providers that are working with traumatized youth? What advice do you have for them?
I think, so when my old supervisor first brought me on, she always used to say, like, the youth would rather hear from someone that can relate to what they've gone through than hear from an old white woman. And to be honest, I hated saying that, but she's right. Like, if you're thinking about bringing a peer support onto your team, know that it makes a difference. Like, it makes a difference for someone. I know that when I was younger, I would have loved to had someone that has gone through the struggle and could relate to me come talk to me and try to give me advice, because it's different when you're trying to, when you're, someone's giving you advice and you're just like, you don't know what it's like. Like, it's easy to give somebody advice when you're not the one going through it, you know? Like, if you don't know what this feels like, you don't know what trauma I'm really enduring or what pain I'm really going through. So it's to have someone that's like, you know what, you get it, you've been there, you've done that, you survived it, and have that person give you advice, it makes a big difference. So I think that if you can bring a peer support on your team, I think that it'll speak for itself. It'll for sure make a difference.
And I believe you touched on this and that. I feel like a lot of youth also think you're just doing it for the money.
Yeah.
A lot of youth have that mentality. It's like, you're getting paid to do this. You don't actually care about me. So a peer support also plays to that role, whereas, like, that's someone who's been in your shoes, who's been there with you, been down on that floor, and has now given back their time to help you rise up and be that light that you were talking about.
Yeah, and then also I think a lot, I know for myself, I have a really good rapport with all of my youth, so the youth really feel it. They can tell when someone's making up that they've gone through something, or when someone is actually has like a passion and has endured the pain, and tell them like, hey, this is something that I've gone through. Like, the youth know the difference.
You're listening to Youth Voice Amplified. This is our guest, Evelette, who is a homeless youth and foster youth advocate in our community. You have such a passion and a fire to you. Can you talk to us about your role as a homeless advocate, and how did you find this opportunity, and what does it mean to you personally to have this role as an advocate for homeless youth?
I do it a lot, and like being a peer support, I work with a lot of the youth that are street homeless and outreach and stuff like that, but I'm also a part of the Youth Action Board. I'm a member of the Youth Action Board, and honestly, it's like, how do I explain myself? You know how you asked me in the beginning, you're like, what is it like to have a youth voice? And I said, like, to be heard, like, to have a voice and it actually be heard. That's what being a homeless youth advocate for me means. Like, I have the opportunity to speak to these people and to actually be listened to, you know? A lot of the times it's like the same as a peer. You know, when someone's touching the topic of homelessness, it's different when someone has gone through it, like someone that has endured it, someone that has gone through the battles of being homeless and knows exactly what it's like and knows what these people are really going through, to be able to bridge that like gap and like actually advocate the needs that these homeless people really go through, that's a lot to me. Like it's honestly like it's really powerful, is just as much as my role to be able to advocate for those that are going through something that I once went through, you know, because I know what it's like to be homeless. I know the struggles that I went through. So to be able to have people that are actually listening to me and feel like I'm making a difference in that way, that means a lot to me.
It's one of those full circle moments.
Yeah,
where it was like you were on the other end and now you're on this end. It's a full circle moment.
For sure.
What would you say some of the common misconceptions are, since you've been on both sides of the field?
Oh, okay. Identifying what a homeless person looks like. I think a lot of the times, especially youth, a lot of the times people don't realize that what a homeless youth looks like is not the same as what a regular adult that's enduring homelessness would look like. Like a lot of the times, I remember, like I said, I used to bird bath in the shower. I used to try to make it look like I wasn't homeless. So a lot of the times, just because someone doesn't look homeless, it's not that they're not going through it. Like there's a lot more to it. Youth are obviously going to try to hide it for various reasons. They're not just going to walk around looking homeless. Not everybody's comfortable with that, you know? A lot of people be like, oh, they choose to be homeless. You don't know how many times I have heard that people choose to be homeless. I don't think anybody would choose to be homeless. I think that it's either a mixture of like foster care, you know, you age out of foster care, you got out of foster care, you don't have nowhere to go, you become homeless. Mental health is a real thing. I don't think that a lot of people realize that, but the things that mental health can do to you and the ways it can lead you, like a lot of people struggle with mental health and nobody's choosing to be homeless, you know? And then substance abuse, a lot of people struggle with substance abuse, and coming from an addict, I don't really think that anybody chooses to be homeless or chooses the drug over being housed. I just think that that's what addiction leads you to, you know? So I think that what homelessness looks like, it can look in many different ways. It doesn't just have to look one way. As someone that went through it and as someone who now advocates for homeless, for the homeless community, it doesn't just look one way. And then also know that nobody chooses to be homeless. It doesn't matter what someone's going through. Being homeless is not something that anybody should have to go through.
Looking back on the experiences you went through, what advice do you have for teachers and schools and providers?
Take that extra second to just ask. Or even if you don't get an answer, just to sit there and tell someone, like, if there's any way that I can help you, I am here to help you. Don't make the assumption that someone's just doesn't care, that someone's just falling asleep in class. Like, if someone would have asked me, why are you always falling asleep in class, I would have told them, you know? Like, just take that second to care, to just really hold the weight that your title holds. Like, be there and be an advocate for these youth. Like, don't ever make these youth feel like you're against them. You're in your position for a reason. You should help these youth feel like you are there to help them. Don't ever make these youth feel like you're the one that's against them. And don't ever make a youth believe that you don't believe in them, because I can't tell you how many youth don't believe in themselves. The last thing you need is for the grown adult, and it might be the only grown adult you have in your life, to not believe in you as well.
You gave advice for teachers and schools listening, but what advice would you have for youth that are currently going through the same things as you did? Like, what words of wisdom would you share with them?
For one, even when you can see the light at the end of the tunnel, even when you don't know if things are going to get better or not, it does get better. The storm doesn't last forever. Like, if I could tell myself, my younger self, like, I would tell myself that life is going to be whatever I decide to make it. just because I grew up knowing something, just because I didn't have parents, just because I decided to have kids at a young age, it doesn't mean that my life is over. Like, your life is not over until you say it's over. Until the day you die, you have every opportunity to change your life. Like, it's never too late to change. It's never too late to do something different. Like, don't give up on yourself. Even if you're the only person that's rooting for yourself, do not give up on yourself. Like, you can do something different. You can become something very big. I went from being homeless, a teen mom, an addict, going through domestic violence, to having three beautiful children, having my own house, having a career that I love, and being able to give back. Like, don't ever give up on yourself. Like, just don't do that. And know that the storm can't last forever.
I want to thank you for being so fiery and passionate about what you do. We don't have a lot of people like that, and I admire it so much. And for being so vulnerable and open, and knowing that you telling your story will affect somebody, it'll touch somebody because you said what you said, and they really listen to it because they might be going through the same thing. So I want to thank you for your vulnerability and just being open and honest with us. What are your goals, personally and professionally, kind of going forward?
I'm actually going through school right now, so one of my goals that I want to do is be able to get my bachelor's degree, and I'm still not quite sure, to be honest. I'm still trying to figure out where it is that I'm going to go with my career. I wanted to be a probation officer for a long time, but then I started being a peer support, so now I don't know if I just want to move up in what I'm doing now and kind of just actually become a case manager, or if I still want to go into probation. That's something that I'm still not quite sure of, but as far as my goals, I just want to continue to grow and learn. I don't ever want to be comfortable in where the position that I'm at. Like, I want to continue learning from the leaders that I'm surrounded with. I want to continue to grow as a woman, as a mom, as an advocate. I don't want to ever get comfortable with where I'm at. Like, I don't ever want to stop growing and learning. One of my biggest goals as a mom is to, like, now that I'm more settled and I have a lot more things figured out, I've matured a lot, I have a lot of more wisdom than I did when I was younger, is to just continue to be there and make up for everything that my kids had to go through when I was struggling, you know? But overall, the goal is to just be happy and learn and use everything that I've gone through to continue to strive to be better for myself and for my kids.
Evelyn, we're close to wrapping up, but I just want to, I don't think I get a chance to thank you for, you know, just using your passion and your experience to help the youth that have gone through things you've done. You know, a lot of people, when they move on, they want to kind of forget about that past and things like that, but you hold that with you and you embrace that and you try and move it forward with the youth and tell them, like, it's not over, you know. The journey continues, and just, I thank you for your passion and really trying to help youth that experiencing things like you've done.
Thank you, and thank you guys so much for having me on.
Evelyn, before we wrap things up, we like to ask our signature question. What is your life motto?
So, I have this tatted on me, and you know, it's crazy that you guys just asked me that question. Like, you know, you asked me what advice I would give to someone. I have it tatted right here in Japanese. It says, never give up. I live by that. Like I said, now you guys know I had a really rough childhood. My adult life has been far from easy, but I'm strong enough to know to not ever give up. Like, don't ever give up. Your battle is not over. Like, if I give up, then that means I went through all that for nothing. And I didn't go through all that for nothing. I didn't make it this far for nothing. I still got a lot to do. So I live by never give up.
Evelyn, thank you so much for joining us on our podcast. You just brought such resilience with a truly remarkable story. I admire your courage and your willingness to be vulnerable and your honesty. Your journey overcoming homelessness and now dedicating yourself to helping others is nothing short other than inspiring.
Thank you.
What a wonderful speaker. I absolutely love how inspiring and passionate she is. You can feel it from across the room. I was almost in tears, which is not very often.
You know, I was just amazed how much of an advocate she is. Pretty much her passion, she carries that with her, and she has the ability to kind of use that and help other youth, you know, just from all the things she went through as far as, you know, being a homeless student and being homeless teen parenting. She gave a lot of advice for schools and providers to help these youth and help pretty much identify them as homeless youth.
She is like an endless fountain of wisdom. She just keeps giving and giving and giving. A lot of people hide their past and hide under that rock, but she uses it to outshine and show up for her community and her youth.
Definitely. I hope this story will change providers and move them in a way that will help them identify and help these youth to the best of their ability.
I like to call our show a myth-busting show, and I think she's our biggest myth-buster yet. Well, that's it for this episode of Youth Voice Amplified. If you enjoyed what you heard and want to support the show, please take a moment and rate us and leave us a positive review on your favorite podcast player. It will help us spread awareness of the podcast and find new listeners.
And if you're looking for our show notes or recommended resources for any of our episodes, please visit our website at www.kern.org/YVA. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, or would like to recommend a topic or guest, you can email us at youthvoiceamplified@gmail.com.
Join us for our next episode when Brian and I sit down with our next youth storyteller. Thanks for listening and see you next time.
And we out of here.
Youth Voice Amplified is a youth-led project of the Kern County Superintendent of Schools Office, created, produced, and hosted by Janessa Fisher and Brian Johnson, with writing, research, and additional production support by Kim Silva, Allison Baptiste, and the Kern Educational Television Network. Major funding for the Youth Voice Amplified podcast is provided by the Student Achievement and Support Division of the California Department of Education through the Homeless Innovative Program Grant. Thanks for listening.